So today is the feast of first fruits tradition, where, as we read in Leviticus chapter 23, from chapter 9 and on, that Elohim through Moses commanded that the people make an offering of first fruits, a wave sheaf offering consisting of grain, whatever harvested at that time. Now, it's not the harvest of the land in of itself, but it's what they planted, it's what they sowed and reaped. So it's they just don't go into the land and grab things. No, it's whatever they, by their own efforts, sowed and reaped. That's what they were to offer in thanksgiving to Elohim, to be accepted of Elohim, as it says in Leviticus chapter 23, verses 11. And he said, "And he," that is the priest, "shall wave the sheaf before the Eternal so that you may be accepted." And when is it offered? On the day after the Sabbath, the priest shall wave it. Now, traditionally, what some do is they keep the feast during the days of unleavened bread. They actually do it on the 16th. The Passover is on the 14th. The Day of Unleavened Bread is on the 15th. And immediately after the days of unleavened bread, they claim that that's when the first fruit should happen. And they reason that it says the morrow after the Sabbath is talking about the first day of unleavened bread, since the first day of unleavened bread is a day of rest. When it says Sabbath here, it is talking about the seventh day Sabbath. That's often how you see it. The only other day you will see referred to as a Sabbath itself is the Day of Atonement. But most of the time you'll see these days are, it'll tell you to rest. As when you read the description here, it says, "You shall do no servile work therein." It's a holy convocation concerning the days of unleavened bread. So this is the day of first fruits. It's an important day, a very important day, but to the for those who are not mindful of Elohim, it seems like an insignificant day. But it's a very important day. Yesterday we read some of the scriptures about the feast of first fruit, but we won't read all of it. But the feast of first fruits is also a day of worship. And as I began to say yesterday, that it is a time where you are actually told. It's so important that Elohim tells us what to say. And in Deuteronomy chapter 26, I will read the portion and just speak a little bit about it from verses 1 through, I believe, up to 10 or a little after. So I'll read in your hearing so you can see how important it is. It says, "When you come into the land that the Eternal, your Elohim, is giving you for an inheritance, and have taken possession of it and live in it, you shall take some of the first of all the fruit of the ground which you harvest from your land that the Eternal, your Elohim, is giving you. And you shall put it in a basket, and you shall go to the place that the Eternal, your Elohim, will choose to make his name dwell there. And you shall go to the priest who is in the office at that time and say to him, 'I declare today to the Eternal, your Elohim, that I have come into the land that the Eternal swore to our fathers to give us.' Then the priest shall take the basket from your hand and set it down before the altar of the Eternal, your Elohim. And you shall make response before the Eternal, your Elohim. Quote, 'A wandering Aramean was my father, and he went down into Egypt and sojourned there, few in number, and there he became a nation great, mighty, and populous.'" Verse 6. "And the Egyptians treated us harshly and humiliated us and laid on us hard labor. Then we cried out to the Eternal, the Elohim of our fathers. The Eternal heard our voice and saw our affliction, our toil, our oppression." Verse 8. "And the Eternal brought us out of Egypt with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm, with great deeds of terror, with signs and wonders. And he brought us into this place and gave us this land, a land flowing with milk and honey. And behold, now I bring the first of the first fruit of the ground, which you, O Eternal, have given me. And you shall set it down before the Eternal, your Elohim, and worship before the Eternal, your Elohim. And you shall rejoice in all the good that the Eternal, your Elohim, has given you and to your house, you and the Levite and the sojourner who is among you. Okay, we'll stop here and we'll continue a little bit about verse 27-12. So, as I said, the Day of First Fruits is a very important time, Feast of First Fruits. It is a response to the fulfillment of a promise made to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. It's a fulfillment. And this service is a service, again, of what? Success, of victory. It's not like the Sabbath, right? This is something you're doing in honor. And that's why it's done when? When are such things done? After the Sabbath. After that. That's why in Leviticus chapter 23 it says, when on after the Sabbath, the priest shall wave your offering. So here they're given the exact instructions how to do what was said in Leviticus chapter 23. Notice the teaching in Leviticus chapter 20 is kind of prophetic. And so it was a way off, 40 years away, 40 years before it happened. So not much detail was given. You were just told, be aware when you go into the land, when you enter the land, you are to do such and such. But here, why such detail is because it's 40 years later. Mm-hmm. They're about to enter the land. So they needed to know exactly what to do. So the details were given to them. So let's look at what it says. So as I pointed out, this is such an important event that the Israelite, not just the priest, the Israelite was told exactly what they had to say. Okay, so how did they say it? Maybe the Levite had a script for them to read from, or maybe the priest would say to them what to say and to answer. So note, let's look at verse 1 again. It says, when you come into the land that your Elohim is giving you for an inheritance and have taken possession of it. It's very clear what it says. It's not when you go into the land and you just enter as did Joshua. We're going to take a quick look at that and then we'll come back. Let's turn to Joshua. It's Joshua chapter 5. And we'll come back to Deuteronomy 26. So let's take a look at this, because this is why some by tradition observe the Feast of First Fruits on the day immediately after Passover. Let's take a look at this. Chapter 5, verses 1. This is about the fulfillment, and that's why it's important we read this. As soon as all the kings of the Amorites who were beyond the Jordan to the west, and all the kings of the Canaanites who were by the sea, heard that the Eternal had dried up the waters of the Jordan for the people of Israel until they had crossed over, their hearts melted, and there was no longer any spirit in them because of the people of Israel. At that time, the Eternal said to Joshua, make flint knives and circumcise the sons of Israel at a second time. What does that mean? Let's read. So Joshua made flint knives and circumcised the sons of Israel at Gibeath Haraloth. And this is the reason why Joshua circumcised them. All the males of the people who came out of Egypt, all the men of war, had died in the wilderness on the way after they had come out of Egypt. Though all the people who came out had been circumcised, yet all the people who were born in the way in the wilderness after they had come out of Egypt had not been circumcised. For the people of Israel walked 40 years in the wilderness until the nation, the men of war who came out of Egypt, were perished because they did not obey the voice of the Eternal. The Eternal swore to them that he would not let them see the land that the Eternal had sworn to their fathers to give to us, a land flowing with milk and honey. So it was their children whom he raised up in their place that Joshua circumcised. for they were uncircumcised, because they had not been circumcised on the way. When the circumcising of the whole nation was finished, they remained in their places in the camp until they were healed. And the Eternal said to Joshua, "Today I have rolled away the reproach of Egypt from you." And so the name of that place is called Gilgal till this day. Let's stop a little bit. So you see, they cross. The nations were terrified. This is 40 years. We're terrified, especially when they saw the Jordan just dried up. That was terrifying. And you're talking about, these are the children of those who left Egypt. And the number we had of those who left Egypt was beside men and women. So they told you the total of the males. There were over 600,000. Without the women, counting the women and children, and without, I don't even think they included the strangers that were among them. So their children, a multiple of the 600,000. So they were over a million now. And so you could imagine different nations watching this horde of people coming through. And how were they? As we see in Hollywood, ragtag? No, they were organized in their troops. You had the tent of meeting, the Levites, behind a group of tribes in the middle. So in the front of the Levites were tribes, to the left there were tribes, to the right there were tribes, to their left there was a tribe, to their right there was a tribe, and there were tribes in their back. That's in Numbers chapter 10. But the Levites were in kind of like in the front, but behind a group of tribes. So with about thousands, like over a million, so they were terrified. So also, they did this. So we learn from here that Elohim is purposeful and mindful. He's not going to ask you to do what's practical. So the law has to be applied with reason. He knew the people were going to be traveling these four. He did not insist that they be circumcised during the traveling, because he knew they would be traveling. He explains it why. So we have to put on the mind of Messiah, because it's the Logos, is Yeshua, the son of Elohim at that time, who was telling them what to do. So we have to understand the law and not make it into bondage, but understand it's for our well-being. We should never do contrary to the law or make assumptions about the law without Elohim's guidance. But all the guidance we need is written here. So you see, yes, they needed to be circumcised, but he's not going to tell you, get circumcised now, walk. He's not going to do that. It's reasonable. You know you're going to be traveling 40 years. Yeah. So that wasn't done. So, and even when they were, he said, verse 8, when the circumcision of the whole nation was finished, they remained in their places in the camp until they were healed. Now, we're talking about circumcisions over a million people. So this take one day? Obviously not. Took a while. So all this thing took time. So understand, from the time they got there, how much time has elapsed? Doing it and then healing is going to take a few days for them to be healed where they're suitable. And then Elohim makes this remark. Today I have rolled away the reproach of Egypt from you. And so the name of the place is called Gilgal to this day. I have rolled away the reproach. You don't understand what that means. That's in connection with the act of circumcision. To remove, right, to roll away. And now he said this 40 years later. That means the reproach of Egypt was still on the sinful Israelites throughout their journeyings. So it's 40 years later, he declares, I have rolled it away. Now you're going to enter the land. Why? Because they disobeyed. That's why they were in the journey for 40 years. So now here's the point I really wanted to get to. Verse 10. So while the people of Israel were encamped at Gilgal, they kept the Passover on the 14th day of the month in the evening on the plains of Jericho. When is the Passover kept? On the 14th day, per scripture. From Exodus through Leviticus, through Numbers, through Deuteronomy, even through Joshua, it tells you stuff. It's not the 15th day as done by tradition. Okay? So on the 14th day, in the evening of the plain, and the day after the Passover, what did they do? And the day after the Passover, on that very day, they ate the produce of the land, leavened cakes and parched grain, and the manna ceased the day after they ate the produce of the land. And there was no longer manna for the people of Israel, but they ate of the fruit of the land of Canaan that year. So here, when people read this, they assume this is the Feast of First Fruits. If the scriptures tell us they kept Passover, why wouldn't it specifically said they observed first fruits? They're not observing first fruits. They observe the Passover and they eat unleavened cakes and parched grain. That's what they ate. So, but this is why, though, tradition says Feast of First Fruits is observed the day after of unleavened bread on the 15th, because it says, and they ate the produce of the land. So they try to connect this with Leviticus chapter 23. It says, when you, about the time you put in the sickle, when you, did they put in sickle here? Mm. Did they do any of that? No. Did they possess the land? No. So that account we read in Joshua is when they just entered, is they're entering. They don't possess it. What does the command say? In, again, Deuteronomy chapter 26. When you come into the land, going back to Deuteronomy chapter 26, what was the command? Not when you enter the land. It is when you come into the land that you're telling your Elohim is giving you for an inheritance and have taken possession of it and you live in it. That's the command. Did Joshua yet possess the land? No, they just barely got in.
Yeah.
They didn't conquer it. They don't own it. Yeah. So they did not possess the land. So what Joshua did there is does not constitute observing the fulfilling this. This was fulfilled when they actually conquered the land and possessed it. Then, when they harvested their harvest, they could present the first fruits. Let that be very clear and without any doubt. That's what it says. Okay, so it's a very important day. It has to happen when they possess the land, actually own it. And we're not going to read what it says. And then they were given specific instructions. They were to go in not anywhere they want, but in the place where Elohim would place his name. In verse 2, it says, go to the place that your Elohim will choose to make his name to dwell there. What does that mean? I mean, that's where the authority comes from. It would be where the tabernacle is, where the Levites placed his tent. And later on in David, the time of David through Solomon, Elohim had mercy on David and allowed him to build the temple through Solomon. And then what did he do? The tabernacle was brought into the temple. So the tabernacle would be housed by the temple. So that's the place where his name, he caused his name to dwell. There were a few, but then it went to Judah and stayed in Judah. And so they were to take some of the first of all the fruit of the ground, which you harvest from your land that the eternal, your Elohim is given you. You shall put it in a basket and then they go to that place. Okay, so you take samples of each type of fruit. So they would go there. And then they were to say, first thing they said is, I declare today to the eternal, your Elohim, that I have come into the land that the eternal swore to our fathers to give us. Could they say, do all of this ceremony while war, while they're in danger? No, they're at peace. It's when they own the land, they're saying this. They're at peace. There's no danger. They're going to the priest with their basket, with samples of all that they've harvested from the land. And then with the first declaration they do is Elohim has fulfilled. I declare today to Elohim, to the eternal, your Elohim, that I have come into the land that you know swore to our fathers to give us. And the priest takes the basket from them and set it before the altar of Elohim, as said in verse 4. And you shall make response before the eternal your Elohim. So that's why I said you shall give an answer, a response. And verses 5 all the way to verse 10, yes, is what they would have to recite or say. It's very important. None of the holy days have this instruction, has this detail. Mm-hmm. What does this tell you about this holy day? See, it's very important. And when does it occur? On the first day of the week. And I won't go into, and also the bringing of the tithes. All these things are done on the same day, not on a different day. All these offerings are collected. Elohim is very wise and sensible. He's not going to now bring the tithes. No, they're bringing the same day during the first fruits of spring, the first fruits of Pentecost, mm-hmm. 50 days later, then in the fall. And so on. That's when these things are, and all of them happen on the first day of the week. And it says in verse 22, you see how it says in verse 12, when you have finished paying all the tithe of your produce in the third year, which is the year of tithing, giving it to the Levite, the sojourner, the fatherless, and the widow, so that they may eat within your towns and be filled. Then you shall say to the Eternal, your Elohim, again, another saying you must say, I have removed the sacred portion out of my house, and moreover, I have given it to the Levite, the sojourner, the fatherless, and the widow, according to all your commandment that you have commanded me. I have not transgressed any of your commandments, nor have I forgotten them. I have not eaten of the tithe while I was mourning, or removed any of it while I was unclean, or offered any of it to the dead. I have obeyed the voice of the Eternal, my Elohim. I have done according to all that you have commanded me. Look down from your holy habitation from heaven and bless your people Israel and the ground that you have given us, as you swore to our fathers, a land flowing with milk and honey. Okay? This day, verse 16. So this is what they had to recite. Three recitals. One is that they had to declare that they have entered to the land as the Eternal told them. Then they had, you know, with their basket, make another declaration of all the blessings they have received. Then they had to make another declaration of what they have done in return, giving the tithe. So it's an acknowledgement of what Elohim has done, allowed you to enter the land, an acknowledgement of all the blessings you have received, and you've given a portion, and an acknowledgement of what you have done in return, giving your tithes, so that the Levites and the poor and the stranger among you can have also. And verse 16 says, this day the Eternal your Elohim commands you to do these statutes and rules. You shall therefore be careful to do them with all your heart, with all your soul. Verse 17, you have declared today that the Eternal is your Elohim, and that you will walk in his ways and keep his statutes and his commandments and his rule, and will obey his voice. And the Eternal has declared today that you are a people for his treasured possession, as he has promised you, and that you are to keep all his commandments, and that he will set you in praise, in fame, in honor, high above all nations that he has made, that you shall be a people holy to the Eternal, your Elohim, as he promised. Amen. So that's the importance of the Feast of First Fruits. Of that same day, you offer your first fruits, you offer all your tithes. You could check. You will all see these things are connected together when they are written. And the portion we read in Leviticus, you will see that. They're connected. These offerings are brought in once for economy. So there's not waste, because there's much to do. Do it in the most efficient way. So that's the day. And that's the same thing we find in the New Testament. That's why when Paul was coming to the Corinthians, he told them, set beside you your offering. Gather it and have it laid up beside you on the first day of the week, so that when he comes, there's no gathering done. What does that tell you? He is doing it following the same instructions. It is to be done on the first of the week. Why? So there's no gathering. When does he come? On the Sabbath. He usually comes with the Sabbath after Sabbath. You see them. They'll come on the Sabbath to have their meetings. So Paul did not want any of that going on during the meeting time. So have it set aside for the first day of the week. So now let's focus on the day. We know that Messiah told his disciples to go prepare the Passover while he was in Jerusalem. He says, in 2 days will be the Passover. Then on the day of unleavened bread, not the feast of it, but the day of unleavened bread, that's when the Passover would, when all leaven would be removed and Passover would be killed to be eaten and later eaten that evening. During the day, they asked, Messiah told them, go to such and such place and prepare for us the Passover. They did. Then we knew in that evening, that same evening, he came and the scriptures that he ate the Passover, as found in the account of Matthew, Mark, and Luke. They all said they prepared for the Passover and that they ate the Passover together. It wasn't another meal, as some would suggest, because we would need to dismiss three straightforward witnesses of Matthew, Mark, and Luke. No, they did not eat the Passover when Matthew, Mark, and Luke said they did. John doesn't specifically mention it, but we know John is not written necessarily in chronological order. So we will continue in a moment.